You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast. The new BTK inhibitors, or the new BT kids on the block, compelling rationale for non-covalent Bruton tyrosine kinase inhibition in B-cell cancers. I'm Deb Gordon, and I'm thrilled to be joined by Dr. Shazia Nakoda, Assistant Professor of Malignant Hematology at Fox Chase Cancer Center, Temple Health in Philadelphia. In this podcast, Dr. Nakoda will help us understand the changing landscape of B-cell treatment by discussing investigational therapies in late-stage clinical trials. Welcome, Dr. Nakoda.
Thanks so much for having me.
So before we get into the future, let's talk about what's going on today. What's the current environment for treating relapsed refractory B-cell cancers?
Well, we have several targeted agents for relapsed refractory CLL, Waldenstrom's, marginal zone lymphoma, and mantle cell lymphoma. And nearly all of these patients are eligible to receive a covalent BTK as part of either their first line or second line setting. So this has really become a mainstay of therapy. This class of agents has revolutionized the way we treat lymphoma, particularly in these histologies. But after patients have progressed on a covalent BTK inhibitor, we'll often turn to other targeted therapies, such as venetoclax and an anti-CD20 monoclonal antibody in CLL, or CAR-T for patients with mantle cell lymphoma. But in the relapsed refractory setting, after multiple prior lines, it can be challenging to achieve long-term disease control. Several of our other targeted agents like lenalidomide, PI3 kinase inhibitors, or proteasome inhibitors, they haven't really been studied in the population of patients that we treat today who would have been refractory to both BTK inhibitors and some of our other preferred second-line options like venetoclax or CAR-T, for example. And so this is a space where it can be very challenging to give good options for our patients.
So that's a perfect opportunity to talk about what is new out there, what is coming, and what the clinical trials are telling us. We have the non-covalent BTK inhibitors. Let's talk about those.
Yeah, definitely. So we're very excited about the non-covalent BTK inhibitors. One of the most important studies we have in this space is the Bruin study, looking at pirtobrutinib. So the original phase 1 and 2 study showed very exciting results, both in terms of efficacy and tolerability for this drug. So this study looked at patients with relapse refractory B-cell malignancies. They included patients with CLL, mantle cell lymphoma, Waldenstrom's macroglobulinemia, as well as other B-cell lymphomas. And we see that about 71% of the patients who were included on the study had progressed on a BTK inhibitor, which was why that drug was discontinued. And about 29% of patients had discontinued a prior BTK inhibitor due to toxicity, or their physician recommended they discontinue the therapy. Really, these were patients with multiple relapsed refractory disease. So the median prior lines of therapy for patients was 3. So in terms of prior therapies of patients who are enrolled onto this study, we see that 76% had received a prior BTK inhibitor, 87% had received prior chemoimmunotherapy, and 94% had received an anti-CD20 monoclonal antibody. Notably, 25% or less had received other targeted therapies, such as venetoclax, PI3 kinase inhibitors, lenalidomide, which is just an important thing to note. What's exciting with this study is that even in patients who had been resistant to the BTK inhibitor, not just discontinued for toxicity, those patients still had a quite impressive response. So we saw that amongst patients in the CLL cohort, for example, the overall response rate amongst patients who had received a prior BTK inhibitor and BCL2 inhibitor was 73%, which is really quite exciting. And this seemed to be at a similar rate amongst those who had not been double refractory. The response rate in patients with a DEL17P or TP53 mutation was a remarkable 80%, which is also very exciting. Lastly, we see that patients who had a C481S mutation seemed to respond as well as those who did not, suggesting that pirtobrutinib induces responses agnostic of this mutation.
And what about the safety profile?
Yeah, so the safety profile was very favorable for this drug. So we saw really low rates of bleeding on this agent, and there were no treatment-related risk of atrial fibrillation or flutter with this drug. We did see a 5% risk of grade 3 or 4 neutropenia, but in my personal experience, this toxicity seems to be easily addressed in clinical practice. There was otherwise 1% or less risk of grade 3 or 4 toxicities, and these were fatigue, headaches, anemia, or pyrexia. And so I think when I consider this agent in comparison to the currently approved covalent BTK inhibitors, this seems to compare quite favorably.
Great. Well, let's move on to the Bellwave trial with nintobrutinib. This one is still investigational, has not been approved for any cancer yet, but tell us what we're seeing in the studies.
Yeah, I think it's really exciting that we're having more options on the market. And so it's great to see another non-covalent BTK inhibitor under investigation. So nintobrutinib seems to have a slightly less narrow specificity for the BTK inhibitor. So there are some other kinases this drug targets as well. And so from the phase one study, we do see some expected toxicities amongst patients that are pretty classic of BTK inhibitors, but these seem to be quite manageable. In the phase one study, they looked at 112 patients, and these included patients with B-cell non-Hodgkin lymphoma and CLL. And the median prior line of therapy on this study was 4. 95% of patients had received a prior BTK inhibitor. 42% had received both a BTK inhibitor and BCL2 inhibitor, venetoclax. In terms of cytogenetics, 32% of those patients were TP53 mutated, 33% had a DEL17P mutation, and 53% had an unmutated immunoglobulin heavy chain. And this is, of course, amongst the patients with CLL. So I think we'll need to see how this drug performs in the later phase studies to better understand how the differences in kinase binding compares to pirtobrutinib. But it is very exciting to see that this drug is also being studied.
If you take out your crystal ball and look 5 to 10 years down the road, how do you think doctors like you will be treating these diseases?
That's a tough question because we just have so many new drugs that are coming out and there's so much that's in flux right now. So for example, we don't know whether sequentially using BTK inhibitors and our other targeted therapies is the right move, or perhaps there are some patients where we're using combination therapies as a fixed duration option. And these are potentially going to be answers in the next 10 years for us. What I can say quite confidently is more and more we're seeing use of the targeted agents in the frontline setting. And so we just need to develop better agents in the relapse refractory setting that seem to be effective in patients with prior BTK inhibitor therapy. And so now that we have pirtobrutinib as an option, that's fantastic. I think one of the challenges that's going to arise is how we deal with resistance to the non-covalent BTK inhibitors. I would like to point out a very interesting finding. When they looked at patients who are resistant to ibrutinib versus zanubrutinib, they noted that those patients who developed a resistance to zanubrutinib had a higher rate of an L528W mutation compared to the classically described C481S mutation, which is more common with ibrutinib. And so now that we're seeing less use of ibrutinib, you know, in the first and second line setting, and a higher use of the second generation covalent BTK inhibitors, it might change how we see responses to this new class of non-covalent BTK inhibitors.
So it's an exciting time.
It's a very exciting time with a lot of unknowns.
Sounds like medicine. Well, I want to thank you so much. That's all the time we have for today. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us about these emerging therapies. And I want to thank our listeners for joining us. We have 3 other episodes in this series, and I hope you'll listen to all of them. This podcast was brought to you by Med Learning Group. Med Learning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I want to give a special thank you to our supporter, Lily, who provided an educational grant for this activity.